When I was preparing this sermon, I was not planning on being sermonic. Sermons normally end with a to-do list, telling you how to get your lives in order and what you should be doing. And I didn't want to do that with this Hanukkah sermon and with this review of what it is like for all of us to have a sense of living life under siege, and this feeling that people have often of being beset by woes and feeling under siege. I just wanted to look at what our histories are as human beings and as communities, what our values are, and how we can reconcile them as individuals. And I realized that's a to-do list. That is, in fact, a sermon. And so I failed in my very first paragraph when I sat down to do this. But that's okay. That's also part of life and living and trying to talk about important emotions and important challenges that we have in our lives. Hanukkah is often called the festival of light. It celebrates on the surface this military victory that was achieved against all odds. It's a tragically eternal story without even getting into the politics of it. But what's it about? It's about a Jewish state feeling besieged. It's about conflict with the occupiers who are from Syria. And it's about oil. I could have written this sermon 2,000 years ago. And with any luck at all, somebody could write this sermon 2,000 years from now, because our challenges are, in fact, hardy perennials. And as I'm going to get to in a couple of paragraphs, there are no final victories. This holiday, not a holy day, but a holiday, celebrates a military victory, and it also celebrates this light that will not go out. The flame that once kindled still burns mysteriously. Well, I don't want to ruin all of your Hanukkahs, but the story of the oil and the candles and the Nir Tamid didn't show up in Jewish lore until over 300 years after the Maccabean Revolt. It's an add-on. It's a piece of mythology. And in my view, it's more important than the military victory. The facts are about the military victory. The truths are about the light that doesn't go out, about the human spirit, about when people who feel besieged and surrounded and challenged find the intestinal fortitude, the koyach, the strength in order to engage the world. It's about when you feel the lights going out in the world as the days grow short, or you feel that you are besieged, as almost everybody in this country does. This is not to get into the whole victim thing, but, and as soon as I do that, you know I'm going to go into the whole victim thing. This is not to go into the victim thing, but the poor feel oppressed and besieged by a jealous middle class. The middle class feel challenged by the top 2% and feel that the lower class and the poor are taking their things away. And, of course, the top 2% feel besieged by the 98%, and everybody feels under siege. And we look at a world, and the world seems like it's under siege. We look at our country, and our country must feel it's under siege because we have a defense budget that is higher than the next 10 countries all put together. So if we're not under siege, we're really making some strange economic choices. The world and individuals always have a sense of challenge. There are always times when there are midnights of the soul. When we look at our nation, when we look at our world, we see ecological challenges as well as economic challenges. We find personal challenges, health challenges, financial challenges, and sometimes you just want to go, sit down and exhale and let the darkness come. Crawl into bed, turn up the electric blanket to 9, assume the fetal position, and hope that it just all goes away. And feeling like that is perfectly fine and perfectly normal. Feeling that you are under siege, understanding that there is the dying of the light seasonally and the dying of the light internally, and yet while accepting that, understanding that even when the light seems to have gone out, even when there doesn't seem to be hope and quality, that there is a spark. For me, Hanukkah is not about the military victory. The military victory was fleeting and you could say even futile. The Jewish people were being challenged by Greek culture, being delivered by the Syrio-Greeks. And the Maccabees were in revolt against that. They were in revolt not simply against the Syrians, the occupiers, they were in revolt against Greek culture, philosophy, and ideas. They were in revolt and attacking their fellow Jews who were not Jewish enough. They were fundamentalists and not religious liberals. They attacked those Jews who changed their names to Greek names, who sent their children to Greek schools, and they fought hard against that Greek influence, and they won a mighty victory. And their grandchildren had Greek names, and their grandchildren went to Greek lycees, and their grandchildren, along with Muslims, kept Greek learning alive when Europe was in darkness. The military victory was worth something in terms of cleaning out the temple and getting a new start, but it wasn't permanent. All of the killing of Maccabees, of Jews, all of the killings of Syrians and of Greeks, all of that was to very little avail. So for me, the facts of Hanukkah are less important than the truth of Hanukkah, that there is a spark. And we may not feel it sometimes. It may get awfully dark inside. As I mentioned last week, a midnight of the soul can go on at any time of the day, and despair can set in. But our faith is in that spark. That faith is in the ability of the light to return, in our ability to fall into darkness and yet to turn back towards the sun. The candle that is used to light other candles in Hebrew is called the shamas, and it comes from a pre-Judaic pagan sun god. The name of the sun is Al-Shamash. And the shamas is the pagan sun god that is repurposed, as they say in business. To Jewish practice. Sit, stay. All right, let's try some more. Okay. No one said it was easy to keep the lights on. So there are these, we all have these moments, every society, every community, every individual, when the lights seem to go out. But we also have that ability to turn back to life and to light. There are always times in the world when there are people in pain and people suffering. And the question becomes, well, how can I be happy when there's hunger in the world, when there's poverty in the world? How can I have a celebration of light when there is so much darkness? And the answer is, we have to. We have to. There's an old story that I have told before, and it's an old story about a medieval village. Of course, it was medieval. It was in medieval times. A medieval village that was literally under siege. An army was surrounding it and trying to starve them out, and they were down to just about the last food and the last water before they were just going to have to give up and be slaughtered. And they decided to do something audacious, to make a joyful noise, to try to fool these people by having a party, by taking the last of their food and roasting the meat so that those troops laying siege could smell it. And then to sing and to dance and to drink and to let out a lot of noise as if they had a cornucopia of food. And the story goes that the army that was laying siege could smell the food, could hear the singing and the dancing, could see the great bonfires, and they said, well, what's the point of this? It's going to last a lot longer. I don't have time for this. We're out of here. And so the city under siege survived. The fact that almost every medieval city I've ever visited in Europe has the same story makes me question the historicity of it, but not the truth. Because the truth is that we have parties when there is suffering. The truth is that we sometimes make a joyful noise in loneliness, that we light a bonfire at a dark moment to celebrate that Al-Shamash, the Shamash, the sun, the light, the spirit, will return. And it's an important part of what we are as human beings, the ability to sanctify and give thanks even in great deprivation. It's what we celebrated just a few weeks ago at Thanksgiving. At Thanksgiving, they celebrated abundance, which they understood not as surplus, but they understood as just enough to get by. That's a wonderful concept. How can we celebrate when there's pain in the world? Well, I'll tell you from Hanukkah and the Jewish tradition that the attitude is that there is always pain in the world. There's always somebody suffering. But that's never an excuse to cancel a party. My uncle died the morning of my bar mitzvah. There was no thought of canceling it, and not because of deposits to caterers, and not because it would have been trouble to telephone people. For some of you, there was no email back then. It was because of the knowledge that there's always trouble. So if you're going to celebrate, if you're going to be happy, if you are going to have a party, grab it at that opportunity. It's not insulting to the pain of others. It's an acknowledgement of how complex the dance is of pain and of joy, of light and of darkness. It's a relationship that we all are in. Many years ago, I was invited to do a comedy monologue, for some reason, for the General Assembly of the Unitarian Universalist Association meeting in Albuquerque. Albuquerque, you may remember, is the hot air ballooning capital of the world. No better or more appropriate place for Unitarian Universalist General Assembly. Anyway, I did my act for about 1,800 happy UUs and 200 who thought it was completely inappropriate to have any humor that could possibly be involved with death, because our Unitarian Universalist attitude towards death is unconstitutionally vague. And making jokes about this, the former president of the association remonstrated with me seriously, saying, how can you make jokes when certainly 20% of the people in that group had suffered losses? Well, no, 100% of the people in the group had suffered losses. Do we never tell a joke? Do we never have a party? Do we never just try to find the light, not as a denial of the darkness, but to counteract it. The way we conquer death and depression is not by ignoring it, but by engaging it with the counterforce of life, of light, of enthusiasm, of a sense of joy and celebration at what we have here. Some years ago, and for those of you who have attended memorial services or funerals that I've conducted, although I did not use this remark last week for Nancy's, we're all used to hearing the 23rd Psalm. And I recited the 23rd Psalm as a child, as a student. I studied it, I translated it, and of course did all of those things without ever thinking about it, which is sometimes the nature of being a student. And I expected a laugh on that line. I'm sorry, let me try that once more. I studied it, I translated it, but I never thought about it, which is the nature sometimes of being a student. Thank you. I hate a mercy laugh, but I'll take it. And then I was sitting as a mourner at a funeral for a relative, and the rabbi was just recited the 23rd Psalm, and all of a sudden it struck me differently. I had an epiphany, and I started to laugh, and I started to giggle. And I felt, and there's a statement that I don't make often, I felt just like Mary Tyler Moore in the episode on the funeral of Chuckles the Clown. And I am sitting there trying not to laugh. Because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I get this thought of, thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. And I'm thinking, God Almighty, you couldn't have prepared a table for me somewhere without my enemies? Nowhere there's a park, there's a nice river, the valley of the shadow of death, okay, but you couldn't find a table, maybe valley of the shadow of death adjacent. And so I'm giggling like this, but I understood that it's true, that there are always the shadows, that there's always the mourning. But there's also the picnic. There's also the table. There's also the ability to light the lights, to sing the songs, to turn towards the light and to rejoice. So even as the shadows fall, even as night approaches, even as we see the skull beneath the scalp, even in all of this, we can see that table of life that is set for us, the banquet and the bounty that is in front of us, and we can also understand our responsibility to clean up after ourselves and to leave the table set and with food and with air and with water and with peace for the next occupants of that table. In this valley of shadow and light and life.